This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Thank you. Here are Thursday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. March corn, 380, down 1. May corn, 387 and a quarter, down 1 and a quarter. July corn, 393 and a half, down 1 and a half. March soybeans, 991, down 18 and a quarter. May soybeans, 997 and a quarter, down 17 and a quarter. July soybeans, 1003 and a quarter, down 16 and three quarters. March wheat, 532 and three quarters, down 5. May wheat, 535 and three quarters, down 5. July wheat, 540, down 5 and a quarter. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday's grain market report. The Illinois country grain prices ended lower on Thursday afternoon. Soybean values were cut with less than expected soy crush numbers. Corn showed only minor weakness on good growing conditions in South America. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids down a penny at $3.46 to $3.65. Soybean bids dropped 19 to 25 cents at $9.41 to $9.75. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 2 cents higher at $3.52 to $3.71, but soybean bids dropped 15 to 19 cents at $9.60 to $9.96. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were mostly steady at $3.56 to $3.70. Soybean bids 18 to 21 cents lower at $9.70 to $9.94, and the wheat bids down 5 cents at $4.33 to $5.13. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids were 18 to 19 lower at $9.89 to $10.06. Basis ended steady to a penny lower at 200 to 15 over the March. High Pro 48% soybean meal on a truck basis offered at $3.46.70 to $3.66.70 per ton, down $8.80 to $13.80 per ton, with basis steady to $5 per ton lower at 20 to 40 over the March. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids down a penny at $3.67 to $3.82, with basis steady range from 13 under to 2 over the March. Illinois River Barge Loading Elevators quoted producer corn bids mixed at $3.63 to $3.77. Basis also ended mixed, range from 17 to 3 under the March. Soybeans down 20 to 21 cents at $9.89 to $9.96, with basis 2 to 3 cents lower at 2 under to 5 over the March. East St. Louis Barge Loading Terminal Elevators place their producer corn bids 1 to 4 lower at $3.89 to $3.92. These same elevators dropped their soybean prices by 24 to 25 cents with quotations at 10.15 to 10.16. Soft wheat down 5 cents at 5.29 to 5.38, and the Milo a penny lower at 4.40 to 4.45. Contract bids to producers for new crop delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country grain dealer bids to producers in those regions for new crop corn range from 3.60 to 3.78. New crop soybean bids at 924 to 949. In central Illinois, new crop corn bids range from 362 to 378. New crop soybean bids at 937 to 952. And in the southern part of the state, new crop corn bids range from 343 up to 378. New crop soybean bids at 921 to 947. And wheat bids for June, July delivery in southern Illinois, they range from 494 up to 523. That completes our country grain report for Thursday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are Thursday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. February live cattle, $154.20, down $1.55. April live cattle, $152.80, down $1.52. June live cattle, $146.45, down $1.15. January feeder cattle, $215.65, down $4.50. March feeder cattle, $205.60, down $4.50. April feeder cattle, $206.35, down $4.22. February lean hogs, $75.62, down 40 cents. April lean hogs, $78.35, up 35 cents. May lean hogs, $84.95, up 42 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Thursday the 15th afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for 200 pound pork carcass traded 3 cents lower in a range of $63 to $73 with a weighted average carcass price of $70.92. From the Illinois Direct Sour Port, slaughter sows are trading steady to two higher with a moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds traded at $36 to $39. 4 to 5 weight at $38 to $42. 5 to 6 weight at $41 to $44. And over 600 pounds at $42 to $46. In the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gelts at country buying points are trading steady to a dollar lower, with moderate demand for moderate offerings ranging $45 to $49. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 312 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $83.89, which was 42 cents lower. Receipts for Illinois hogs this afternoon have totaled 12,328. Greenville Livestock Auction Report for Wednesday, January 14th, had receipts of 585. Compared to last week, slaughter steers and heifers traded $2.50 to $3 lower. Slaughter Holstein steers traded a dollar lower, and slaughter cows traded steady. Steers choice at $162 to $165. Holstein steers choice at $151 to $156. Heifers choice at $162.50 to $165. Slaughter cows premium average dressing at $130, boners average dressing at $93 to $100, and leans average dressing at $90 to $100. Slaughter bulls average dressing at $120 to $125. Feeder steers medium and large, 6 weight at $215 to $231. Feeder Holstein steers large, 5 weights at $181 to $200. Feeder heifers medium and large, 3 weight at $252 to $305. 4 weight at $241 to $264, and 5 weights at $211 to $227. The Rios Livestock Auction Report for Wednesday, January 14th, had receipts of 306. Steers choice at $159.50 to $168. Heifers choice at $164 to $170. The opening Walnut Livestock Auction Report for Thursday, January 15th, had receipts of 509. Slaughter steers choice at $158.25 to $165.25. Slaughter Holstein steers choice at $143 to $150. Slaughter heifers choice at $159 to $164.75. In a direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at $162 to $165.50. On a dress basis traded at $260 to $265. Heifers on a live basis traded at $157.75 to $164, and on a dress basis traded at $260 to $265. In the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading mixed. Choice carcasses were $262.88, which was 93 cents lower, with select carcasses at $254.07, which was 78 cents higher. From the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated 112,000 compared to 108,000 last week and 120,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 432,000 compared to 387,000 last week and 427,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is David Humphreys of the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
The USDA has just announced a new regional conservation program under the 2014 Farm Bill that leverages hundreds of millions in private and public funds. At a time when Congress continues to cut agency budgets, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the Rural Conservation Partnership Program starts an historic new era in conservation, using leveraged dollars for regional versus just single farm efforts.
We fully expect the resources that are being announced today to be matched at least dollar for dollar. So what we're looking at is nearly $750 million of investment in conservation. Roughly 70% of the projects being funded impact water quality and quantity. We are looking at flood prevention, drought resilience, nutrient management, and other strategies focused on better soil health and better water quality.
With about a quarter of the projects in all 50 states focused on wildlife habitat improvements, the leveraged money will come from conservation groups, state and local governments, land-grant universities, and other non-federal partners. Federal dollars will come from the EQIP and CSP programs. Natural Resources Conservation Service Chief Jason Weller.
It's empowering local communities local partnerships, but importantly, private landowners, farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners, to take control, to identify what their needs are in their communities and their operations in their counties, and then bring and invite to the table both traditional partners like state agencies, like conservation districts, conservation organizations, sportsmen groups, but then invites to the conversation and to the table to design and deliver solutions other organizations, agricultural commodity organizations and associations, farm groups, dairy cooperatives.
And even water utilities, ag retailers, certified crop advisors, and farm elevators, possibly involved in some 115 projects to start. Weller says such a locally led approach, leveraging non-federal funds, will catalyze innovation and get more conservation over a large area with fewer federal dollars. There's a phrase making its way through the agricultural and energy sectors. It's called the renewable gap. Todd Gleason has more on just what it is and why it might be a boon for the price of soybeans.
The renewable gap is the difference between the maximum amount of corn-based ethanol which can be blended into the U.S. gasoline supply and the amount that's required by law. The amount required by law is more than a maximum amount that can be blended, about 1.5 billion gallons more.
So to fill that renewable gap, obligated parties have to choose one or more of the following alternatives. They have to use from their available stock of RINs credits if they have some. They can incentivize the use of higher blends like E15 or E85, or they can use a non-ethanol biofuel like biodiesel to meet that renewable gap.
The available RINs inventory, I won't bother to explain what these are, is mostly used up. This puts the pressure on the other two options to fulfill the renewable gap of about 1.5 billion gallons. This can be achieved by making higher ethanol blends available for automobiles capable of burning E15 and E85. Those are examples. Or by turning to an alternative renewable fuel source to fill the gap, biodiesel rather than corn-based ethanol. Here's what Irwin thinks will happen.
I do know that expansion of E85, which will require additional pumps to be put in place, that just simply can't happen that fast. We've talked to people in the industry and they suggest to add additional E85 pumps takes a minimum of 8 to 12 months just to get through all the regulatory red tape, get them built, put them in. So we think that the burden of meeting that renewable gap will more than likely fall on biodiesel.
Interestingly, corn is not cut out of this part of the market, and the other primary row crop in the Midwest is likely to be a big winner, soybeans.
Over half of the ethanol plants in the United States have the capability of extracting corn oil from some point in the production process, and then that generally is going into biodiesel production. So that'll continue to be used. Someplace around half of the feedstock for biodiesel in the U.S. is soybean oil, and that will continue. The rest is largely different kinds of recycled cooking oil and fats and grease.
It'll have to do to fill the renewable gap and more. Unless the statutes are changed, the United States will require some 3 billion gallons, twice the renewable gap, in biodiesel to be used in the nation's fuel supply. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Data gathering and analyzing has become a very important aspect of the business for farmers, and many companies are recognizing that. I spoke with Reagan Weir of CHS and Shipman about their data gathering and analyzing program, YieldPoint.
Yes, what we're doing with YieldPoint, and we're taking a different look at how the farmers are utilizing their data that they've been collecting on their farms over the past several years, some of them up to 20 years now that they've been collecting data. And we're trying to help them figure out how to better utilize that data on their farm.
And this is quite the movement. Big data has been a real large topic lately. And many farmers are really wanting to get into having their farm data analyzed and getting it into programs that can start helping them on the farm. But there is concern about the rights to that data. So how do you address issues like that?
Well, absolutely, and rightly so. That's their data, and at CHS, we consider it's always their data. When we collect it from them, their yield data, we store it locally here. We don't send it to Minneapolis or to another hub. We store it locally. We sit down and look at with them locally. We analyze the data and look at areas in the fields that are producing more or less, and then we develop a plan for inputs that provide solutions on how to better utilize all those inputs.
And how do you see this helping farmers the most, and what areas do you see this helping them make improvements in?
Well, I think that we look at, and farmers want to be good stewards of the land and nutrients and everything that they do, and they also want to grow a lot of production. They want to do it efficiently, and they also want to do it profitably. So all of this data they've been collecting helps to provide those answers to that, where we put nutrients and what we call in the R4 strategy, you know, the right product at the right rate, at the right time, in the right place. All of this data they're collecting gives us answers to that. And so each one of our farmers have the opportunity with us to look at this data and figure all those pieces of the puzzle out.
And when collecting data and getting it into a more utilizable form, there are generally a bunch of field maps that are a result of this data. Is that how YieldPoint looks at the data collected, through field maps?
Well, we use field maps and we use the images of the field, but it's really the data that the guys are collecting, and we pull that into our system. We'll look at multiple year yield data, or we call it MYYA, and that's what we feel like is the ground truth data, that it's not looking at a satellite image over your field, or it's not really pushing the easy button. It's what really the hard data that comes off the field is. And so we pull that data in, and then we show those maps, and we'll overlay their soil data and their harvest data. We may have variable rate seeding maps. We may have variable rate fertility maps. We look at all those things, and we create zones in the fields where they have been getting better or worse production, and then we match up those inputs.
And so does this data compound on itself year after year?
Yeah, we continue to bring each year in, and then we'll rerun the analyzation tool and see how that year fits. As we've looked at the last 4 or 5 years of corn data, obviously 2012 was a horrible corn year for us with the drought and heat. But as we look at those zones in the fields, they kind of show up the same. The areas that are yielding high did so in those really hot, dry years as well as in a wet year.
Very interesting. And I'm sure that the farmers as well find this interesting to learn about their fields and the ground that they've been working on for many years. I'm sure that these trends have been observed before, but now there's proof through the data collected.
Oh, yes. And it's really interesting to sit with the farmer and look at a field, and he may have an 80 on our, we have a, well, it's actually like a 60-inch big screen TV that we look at the definition of the variability in the fields with them in our office. And it's really interesting to talk with them about what's went on in those fields over the years.
And so if a farmer is wanting to learn more about YieldPoint, how do they do so?
Well, they can call any of our area salesmen or at our office here at Ed Shipman. You know, they can talk to really any of us. And Joe Huebner and Jim Walker, kind of our leads here at our plant. And what we do is the big key is to collect their yield data. As we collect that and help them analyze it, it's pretty easy steps right along the process.
Again, that was Reagan Weir with CHS in Shipman. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.